those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men.
Welcome, everybody. This is Roomtone, the show that takes filmmaking's community to your ears. I'm Ruggero, your host, and here we are, the second episode of the second season. This is Roomtone, take 15, and we're super lucky today because this is an episode dedicated to fantasy lovers. And, of course, that was the soundtrack of The Lord of the Rings, and we just jump straight into the mind of our guests. Today, we have an incredible combination dedicated all to crowdfunding. We have fantastic Ben Dobbins and Nicolas Ayerbe Barona. How are you guys doing today?
All good. How are you?
Doing great.
I'm feeling pretty good over here. It's a beautiful Monday starting off the week here at CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam land. Now let's go straight to it. So for the people out there who don't know you, who are you guys? Who are you, Ben?
My name's Ben Dobbins. I recently moved up to Canada from the States. I've been running a company in the States for the last 8 or so years called Zombie Orpheus Entertainment, where we basically threw the rule book out the window and have been crowdfunding our way to success.
Wow, that sounds like a great great pitch right there. Starting good, starting with the episode nice and clean and powerful. How about you, Nicolas?
Well, this is my second time in the show, so I'm. Thank you so much for inviting me again. I am the producer of Cadence, the film, which is a feature film that debuted in 2016 at the Vancouver International Film Festival. Now I'm also a board member at the Documentary Organization of Canada, and I also recently just joined part of the team of the Vancouver Short Film Festival. So slowly making my way within the industry in Vancouver. My feature was crowdfunding, and I have crowdfunded several projects and worked in a few others related to social media.
Amazing. Look at this combination of people that we have here. All right. It's the second time for Nicolas here actually at the show. He was here at the first in the first season, and when we see that there is passion, we just keep cultivating and we keep exploring. So I feel we're going to be enjoying today's episode for sure. Going right straight to it, Ben, where are you originally from?
Sure. So originally, yeah. Started off in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
But you know, moved out of there by the time I was 3, and I've been in the Pacific Northwest ever since with occasional diversions to other places, but United States, now here in Canada, and looking forward to staying.
Right on. So when did it happen? When did the change happen?
For coming up to Canada?
Yes.
You know, my wife and I looked at each other in 2010 when our daughter was born and said, you know, we got to get out of the States before the 2016 election, and it turns out we were right.
Wow. So Ben is also a father. There you go. 100 big respect for that, you know. It's not it takes a lot of work, and it's a lot of respect for that. Lots of love that goes into it.
It's totally worth it.
Yeah.
It's totally worth it. And, you know, as facetious as I may be about the American political situation. I love Canada. I love being here. I love the culture. I love being in a country that looks out for its citizens and where people are looking out for each other in a way that I didn't experience in America.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a privilege to be here.
Interesting. All right. Appreciating every second. Now, Nicolas, how about you?
Where am I from?
Yeah.
So I'm from Bogota, Colombia. So I'm Latin American. I was a kid when I grew up there, but I also became, as a teenager, I moved to Bolivia, and then I came to Canada in 2007, basically for university. I was looking for ways into filmmaking. There isn't much of a film industry in Colombia, but it's slowly growing a little bit by bit. There's more of a TV industry over there. So when it came time to university, I was like, oh, where should I go? I kind of had hesitations about the United States. A lot of my friends had went to university to the United States. And I just I visited the U.S. and I didn't like what I saw.
I see.
And the price and everything of learning filmmaking over there was really hard. So when I just looked into extra options, Vancouver was the third largest industry. It continues to be. Maybe at times it reaches number two in North America for the film industry. It only made sense.
We're in the right place at the right time. That's how
right
it sounds like.
Right.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, let's go to the juice. Let's go to the juice right here, okay? So we came here to talk crowdfunding because it might be the answer to lots of questions and imbalances in the industry. So we have two masters, two people that know the ins and outs of crowdfunding here and there in their own way. And we're here to learn a little bit about their journey and their process. And actually, we'd love to start with Ben and how everything started with the Zombie Orpheus Entertainment and where it led up and where we are right now.
Sure. Well, weirdly, I crowdfunded my first film, and this is not a mistake, in 1998.
Wow. So how did that happen?
The internet existed, but I basically went in person to as many connections as I could, raised, you know, $20 a piece.
Wonderful.
And was able to shoot my second feature film. So, and that really became the genesis of Dead Gentleman Productions, which is now a part of the Zombie Orpheus family. So, so we've been going for almost 20 years now, building this audience and kind of evolving our own perspective on how to release films, how to make them, how to stay independent, how to tell the stories that we want to tell. And, you know, had our kind of the traditional horrible Hollywood distribution experience. And then I was just sitting there and working on the business plan for the next film after that, realized that business plans for independent films only exist to show to hide from investors that they're not going to make their money back.
Wow, this is nice and punchy. I love it, man. This is amazing.
So had this brainstorm, why not throw all of these rules out and make a business plan that would pay investors back and that would get the films in front of eyeballs? So we said, okay, forget selling units. We're in the business of creating a sustaining fan base. And that gives us the freedom to stop worrying about piracy. It gives us the freedom to let our works go out there and be remixed and be reused by other people and be engaged with by the people who are most passionate about it, instead of treating our biggest fans like they're criminals for wanting to share our work.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Right?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And, and from there, we launched the new company, Zombie Orpheus, in 2010 on the basis of giving everything away for free, letting people share it, pirate it, remix it, do whatever they want. And here we are 8 years later as a successful indie film company that's in the black and getting to make the films we want with a worldwide audience.
This is wonderful. Sounds like beauty for me. Now, Nicolas, what's your experience with the crowdfunding?
For sure. So basically, the only big... I've done a lot of shorts and done a lot of commercials. The only big feature, my biggest project, Cadence, which I've spoken to before, and you can see that episode in order to find out more about the film, from that... that was entirely crowdfunded. That's the only thing that I props to you, because it sounds like you've been holding on to the indie spirit for entire life. That's incredible. That's amazing. I was taught my filmmaking life here, right here in UBC film production. And the way that film school is can be very part of the system. So when I was part of film school, we were being taught the system. It's a little bit different than the U.S. The U.S., it's entirely a private venture. Whenever I go down to the U.S. and I meet U.S. filmmakers, they're always jealous of the Canadian system.
Okay.
But in some ways, I'm kind of also jealous of the U.S. system because I think the reality is like it should be a mixed system. I think Canada has this little bit too much of a reliance in what I like to call the socialized entertainment, because basically all of the agencies of the government of Canada are involved in filmmaking. They come from the government. The tax money funds films and shorts and web series nowadays.
Getting pretty technical over here.
What that creates is a system of gatekeepers. And so whether or not you're in the United States and you're dealing with studios or private investors, or you're in Canada dealing with an agency or, a mixed model like TELUS, corporation slash tax credit sort of situation, you're dealing with all these gatekeepers.
Okay.
And that's at the core of
Yeah, Canada. we don't really like gatekeepers over here. It's not that we're trying to get rid of those guys.
I don't hate them. They're not indie.
Yeah,
there's a place for gatekeepers, but there's also a place to empower the audience.
Absolutely.
We probably all lived through or remember one way or another, like shows like Firefly getting canceled, and Veronica Mars, and Jericho. Just this kind of entire generation of shows that people tried so desperately to save that the gatekeepers killed.
And it's still happening. Every pilot season, there's a show that gets canceled,
where people fall in love.
With people falling in love, exactly.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of our inspiration came from, is saying what would happen if we harness these energy, these people who are sending pallet loads of peanuts to the network who doesn't want them, or pallet loads of Mars bars to the network. What would happen if you just said, hey, you can keep the show you love alive, here we go.
That's amazing. Exactly. So how do you feel crowdfunding steps in here? Where do you feel the mechanic actually is the most successful?
I think the mistake that people make with crowdfunding is thinking that it's about money. Because the most important thing that happens when someone makes a pledge to your campaign is that they've made an emotional investment in your success. And that emotional investment, then they see all the other people around them who are doing that as well. And that creates community. And community is what gives you the strength to become sustainable and to move on. Money is just a tool that communities use to achieve their collective goals.
Wow. Isn't that so nice and tight?
It's 100% true. I have a lot of friends that always, because I've done like 3 crowdfunding campaigns, anybody that hasn't done it, they will come up to you and they'll be like, so what's the magic sauce to your success? And I'm like, there's no magic sauce and we didn't make that much money. But in reality, what is powerful is that the moment that the film was done, I already had an audience, and I was able to sell tickets to that audience the moment that my film came out and went to the Vancouver International Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So we sold out, and we sold out on the basis of simply posting stuff on Facebook.
And not just a passive audience, but
exactly.
An active audience,
because
they became involved by making a choice.
Yeah, definitely.
And that you can just roll into ongoing engagement.
Yeah.
It's immensely powerful.
And in your case, I assume, I don't know, you can tell me about your work, but it seems like you're more of a genre person. My film is still a genre film. It's a psychological thriller, but it's not one that necessarily has like one of those dedicated fan bases that go into Comic-Con or anything like that. It's sort of just attracts a niche kind of person that just likes horror or maybe likes mystery, That's kind of what they're going for. So maybe you can talk more about the fact of what an audience means to you.
Sure. Well, let me give you an example. We started off making horror comedies and built a small audience. And then, just for fun on the side, created this little film called The Gamers, about tabletop role-playing gamers sitting around, and then we cut into their imaginations into the fantasy world. And we just did it because it spoke to our own experience as nerdy people who like playing role-playing games. What we discovered when that film became a viral internet sensation, or the equivalent for 2003, was that it spoke to people's identity in a very powerful way, where they were able to, we've had people coming to us at conventions for a decade afterwards saying, this didn't laugh at me, this didn't punch down, this let me show people who I am and what's important to me. And speaking to that kind of identity and passion that people hold, for me, is where you build an audience.
I see. So there is a constant cycle going between the storyteller and the audience. It's almost never ending. How would you suggest, though, for the people out there who are trying to initiate this sort of movement, what is the first step for them?
There's so many approaches you can take. My approach is always to think about, what am I passionate about, where the media isn't speaking to, that doesn't exist in the mainstream, or mm-hmm. that the mainstream gets wrong? How can I express this aspect of identity or this idea clearly enough that other people can understand it? How do we understand someone who's different from us? How do we build bridges with the other instead of, you know, trying to do the American thing and throw a wall up?
I see. Oh, all right. Look at that. She's right there. Mm-hmm. 100 points for Ben right
topical,
there.
Topical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nicolas, yes. What was your experience when you were done with the crowdfunding campaign?
It was insane. I mean, I can speak to about three different crowdfunding campaigns. One was for the short film Citizen Jane by director Cary Green. Another one was obviously Cadence by director Alex Lascheras. And the last one was a theater show.
Okay.
Yeah, which was slightly different. Citizen Jane, the film was completely done, but we crowdfunded because the director had basically mortgaged her house.
Wow. Okay, all right.
There was, even though the film was made, there was debt, and there was also a component to the film that was impactful. The film was speaking about the banning of homosexuals in the 90s here in Canada, and how that sort of played out in similar ways in the United States and all over the world. And essentially, because the director is LGBTQ, she wanted to tell this story, which did not have, even though it was resolved in the 90s in Canada, much earlier than all the problems in the US and Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it did not have, it still had impact in the lives of a lot of the men and women that served and were LGBTQ.
Ben, do you feel that that's a morally speaking something correct to do?
Absolutely, and you know, I could go on a very long rant about why representation is so important. Again, for not just our expressing our own identities, but understanding other identities and recognizing our common humanity among them. And, you know, it's one of the things that we've really tried to do with our projects as well, is to make sure that we don't fall into the trap of just showing people who are like us.
Yeah. And I mean, to end that story with Citizen Jane, it's a very successful short. It went on Out TV. We made a petition to the government, at the time the Harper government, a very conservative government, to basically say, apologize to all the men and women that have suffered through this. At least apologize, because there was never an actual apology. The apology actually came through with Justin Trudeau, I believe, last year.
Okay.
Right? I don't think it's because of the film, but I think it's because times have changed and the film was a part of it. The film played at several festivals, queer festivals and everything. So the experience with that crowdfunding campaign was being part of a movement.
I see. I feel Ben has something to say over here.
Yeah, I feel very strongly that politics and politicians react to culture, and the way we change culture is through storytelling, which is what makes the Definitely. Work that we do so powerful and so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's hard to say whether or not Harper or any politician, you know, saw the film. We had support from some NDP people, a very important party here in Canada, And eventually the film just continued playing on itself, but it was part of a collective of these films that were speaking about this subject, because there is a darker history in Canada that sometimes people don't like to talk about, because the image of Canada outside to the world is medicine and mooses and beavers and maple syrup, but it's not entirely true. And then finally, I guess with Cadence is the one that probably I can speak to the most. We jumped straight into production of the film. Like I had a month of pre-production between the crowdfunding campaign and the film. So there was literally no time to think about the crowdfunding campaign when the crowdfunding campaign was over. Now we have tons of time about thinking about what to do with the people.
Yeah, that's great. I see also another thing I see in this room is the love for the genre. So I've been hearing this word a lot in here, and this is interesting because today's episode is actually dedicated to fantasy because Ben has a little bit of a surprise and a little bit of a genius mechanism to share with us all today, dedicated to all fantasy creators and fantasy content lovers. So if you're one of those, open your ears right now and don't forget this name, Ben Dobbins, for the Fantasy Network. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So what we've experienced, you know, over the last 8 years is we've gone in and we've really worked to improve our model and to experiment, and we're now at the point where we have something that works and we want to share it. We want to empower more independent filmmakers to reach their audiences directly. And so what we've done is now collaborated with Aerostorm Entertainment and The Forge Entertainment, two other big Kickstarter fantasy companies, and we're launching collaboratively The Fantasy Network online at thefantasy.network.
Right on. Okay, nice. We're going to actually get to talk a little bit more about the Fantasy Network in a second. This is Roomtone. We chat movies over here. I'll catch you right after the break. Welcome back, everybody. Here we are about to talk movies again with Ben Dobbins and Nicolas Ayerbe Barona. We're about to talk about an extremely interesting and fascinating platform that Ben, you know, is about to tell us all about. What is the Fantasy Network for all fantasy lovers out there?
Sure. So, you know, the easy answer is it's like Netflix for fantasy, which, but it's nothing like that. You know, our goal it was to create a platform for what we called shared cinematic universes. Again, getting back to this whole notion of empowering audiences, not focusing on unit sales, but creating this sustainability. And so the Fantasy Network, you know, has a video streaming component, and we've been licensing content from amazing creators around the world. But our primary goal is to take these audiences, combine them, and use them to help fund more content for more creators, to use the models that we've developed to get more people telling the kinds of stories that can't happen via the gatekeepers.
I see. Going back to those gatekeepers. So
that's right.
Nicolas, where do you actually see this new platform, you know, in the more community?
I think it only makes sense, to be honest. The more I think about the future of this industry, the more I think of the only path for filmmakers right now. You have to always be a multitasker, a businessman, your own sound designer, etc. All these kinds of stuff that you have to learn. In order to succeed, you can always build a great team of people to, you know, fill in the gaps and that kind of stuff. But there was rarely people in the past who attempted to also be the gatekeeper. And I think the reality is that's what you're becoming. You're a gatekeeper to your content. And that's the only gatekeeping that should really exist, in my opinion. That being said, there is power. There's power in like the community of like, say, this being part of CVC or being part of TELUS and these big networks. Or, you know, if you're in the United States, if you're joining a TV channel or something like that. Power in the sense of numbers and marketing.
I see.
But the internet has definitely opened up every single channel and opportunity for you to just connect directly to the people that you want to meet, you know. You remind me a lot of... I met very recently a group of... documentary filmmakers through the board of the Documentary Organization of Canada, who are also attempting something similar, of which is it's a website called doku.tv, and it's basically a model of how do we connect the creator with the viewer, and that this feedback loop returns content and money between
and each this other, is why I know? Feel so strongly about allowing the community to engage actively with the content.
Yeah.
Where, you know, especially if they are the ones who are funding it,
yeah.
You know, giving them the freedom to remix and to play. And that's where I'm so fascinated by this whole notion of shared cinematic universes. What if you had the freedom, obviously this would never happen, but what if you had the freedom to tell your own canon stories within the Star Wars universe? Mm-hmm. You would see some amazing, fascinating stories and perspectives that would never make it past Disney.
Yeah,
I see. So basically, here we're trying to get rid of those gatekeepers and become a little bit more independent in the way story flows in the society and in the community.
Sure. Well, let me give you an example, if it's all right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go for it.
Yeah.
Man,
so we've been working on a project called Strowlersk, and as the first example of this new model, and that we built the platform to accommodate. And the idea was we'd create an umbrella universe that could allow creators from all over the world to tell a story that would connect together. We've not released this yet, but what's happened is that as creators around the world have heard about this, they have come to us and said, how do we get involved? So we're now at the point where we've not only shot, you know, our pilot episode in Seattle, but we were then invited to Ireland, and we shot a time travel ghost story there. And the shamans in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, heard about this project and said, "You understand us. This speaks to our this world
wow!
speaks to our identity."
This is incredible.
So we went out and we spent 3 weeks in Mongolia shooting an urban fantasy in Ulaanbaatar.
Wow.
And you know, here's the kicker. There's now an Australian team who's getting ready to tell their part of this connected story.
Oh, incredible.
And they're going to fly down the lead actress from Mongolia to appear in the show in Australia.
That is a genius. Yeah. Wow, beautiful.
And this is what happens when you empower people to be creative and to connect. Already we're having these global connections and storytelling taking place
amazing.
Because people are free to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, wonderful.
That level of connection is exactly what one is looking for here. And I think it goes back to me, it's almost like a whole new level of the auteur theory. I'm sure that people have heard of the auteur theory and how, you know,
Tell us a little bit about it. Go for it.
I mean, basically, the auteur theory basically tells us that the director and the writer are the head of the entire film business, and that the film is a vision or a message straight from the director's heart or brain, right? As opposed to a studio or a writer, you know. It's been expanded, you know, it's very popular in the 60s, but its components are still very much alive. The fact that we all love Spielberg and George Lucas is a fact of, like, the auteur theory is very important. And if there's anything that we've learned about those big Hollywood directors and the way that we make films nowadays, is that whether you're a showrunner on television or you are a director in film, you have been given the capacity to become the full power and leader and the message maker of your content. It is now your turn to basically also not just be the content creator, but also be the businessman behind your content. And I think that's the way that it expands into everything, where you are creating your own platform, you are creating your own business, you're connecting with your own audience instead of having to leave that job to somebody else.
Wonderful. That's a great summary right there. It sounds like we're all in a deep process of transition, not only in the filmmaking world, but also globally. I see Ben has something to say. Go for it, man. Splash it through that microphone.
So part of what has fascinated me about this project, and that connects particularly to the auteur theory, we started off with our writer's room and with a very particular idea for the themes that we would be working with. But at the same time, you know, kind of the tagline for the show is tell your story, change the world. And what has happened as we've started meeting with these other filmmakers, these Mongolian shamans came in, they told their story, and they changed not only their world, but the world of stories that were, we've moved so far beyond our tour theory because what we intended to do, I'll give a very quick example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were looking at kind of magical oppression as a metaphor for personal oppression.
Mm.
And what the way they changed our world is say, no, magical oppression is cultural oppression.
Oh, wow.
Which
okay.
we've now heard as well. I've met with some storytellers in the BC interior from the First Nations people.
I
and
see.
Recently met with a Maori actress in New Zealand.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
And what I'm hearing around the world is that theme reflected. And there's
yeah.
something immensely powerful about having started off with this particular idea of what I wanted to say as an auteur and having it utterly transformed by perspectives that I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, well, that's it means being open, you know. That's adaptability. That is a great skill right there even to have. Probably that's something that we miss a little bit as well. I notice that there is a lot of this, you know, imposure. Is that how I say imposing the story? You know,
yeah.
that is a little bit of a mistake that it yeah. happens. I notice many times. What would you say, and what did you do to actually open up to those other options?
Well, I'm convinced that platforms create culture. As
I
an
see.
Example, we were crowdfunding before Kickstarter. And then Kickstarter came in with a certain set of assumptions about how rewards were structured, and they changed the culture of crowdfunding to something that was transactional and reward-based instead
Definitely.
Of community-focused on how do we create yeah. this singular piece of art. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, as we work, the internet itself is a platform that is built on sharing information, the ability to make perfect, infinite copies of your work at no cost to you. And you can either be the gatekeepers who are spending millions of dollars trying to fight that, or you can work with it. And the way that connects back to all of this is that that kind of openness and connection naturally creates the kind of culture that we then see reflected in these experiences
mm-hmm.
that we're talking about.
Yeah, for sure. I do think there is a cost to crowdfunding, and I'm sure you can talk about it. It's not there's a time, and you know, there's the triangle of time and quality and like money and whatnot and all that, and there's a time factor and quality factor there that needs to play out for your crowdfunding.
Where do you see that happen specifically?
Sometimes a crowdfunding campaign, like the video of a crowdfunding, the pitch video of a crowdfunding
yeah.
campaign, looks just as good as a movie, and it just makes me wonder, like, how much did they spend in making this pitch video? Why didn't they just shoot the goddamn thing? And that goes for products as well, as because that's the problem that you're talking about, which is the key platforms. Indiegogo has a little more heart in my opinion, but Kickstarter, Indiegogo, they've become essentially glorified Amazon stores.
They're pre-sales.
They're pre-sales, exactly.
Mm.
It's all pre-sales hidden behind the veneer of, you know, we're trying to... there is a little bit of a community there. I don't totally love them or hate them, but the more you realize that, for example, they're not perfect, in my opinion, for filmmaking.
This is where I think I have to do a shout-out for the folks at Seed and Spark.
Seed and Spark is...
who
yeah.
are doing brilliant work
brilliant.
In... creating that ongoing community focus on the core
yeah,
mission.
Definitely. And many, I went to a talk with where I saw Emily Bass from Seed and Spark,
mm-hmm.
and she switched on completely on the concept of community creation. And that's the important aspect.
Yeah.
Honestly, guys, that's what matters.
It
I know that
yeah.
I know that making movies and money is really important, but the only thing that really matters is if you have a bunch of people following you, then you'll be fine.
He has a lot to say through that microphone. And it seems like we're going really a lot back to community. Do you think there is a secret to building a community, or there is a how would people start building a community? How is the process of embracing the community? If you know, for the people out there who have this big question mark around community, do you have any precise experience around community building?
my entire job is creating and building communities and nurturing communities that already exist. Let me give you an example.
I like these example moments. Yeah. Very
so,
neat.
We're just, at heart, we're a small independent company that's doing all right, but, independent film, you're constantly scraping by. We're not changing the world in any meaningful way. But what happens when every time we run a crowdfunding campaign is that we have doubters. We have people who say, there's no way you're going to reach this goal. What are you thinking? The community will not come through.
I see.
And when you succeed, it becomes this extraordinary emotional experience where they suddenly become believers in the value of collective action. And for me, that is fundamental. When people realize what we can accomplish when we work together, that really transcends, okay, we're just making silly little fantasy comedy movies, and becomes empowerment and trust that we can do that in other realms where it might be more important than whether or not a movie gets funded.
Yeah, overcoming the challenge strengthens the bonds, eh?
Yeah, and as you're building a community, creating challenges that are enough of a challenge, but that you're confident that you can overcome, really does build those bonds. You craft that into the crowdfunding process so that you get these emotional payoffs. It's like you're creating a video game where you want to have a good payoff after a big struggle on a periodic basis to maintain engagement.
Balance and awareness right there. Nicholas, do you have any positive community creating experience in your life? Something you want to share?
Well, I mean, I'm basically trying to think. It goes back to what I was mentioning before, for example, with Citizen Jane and the whole LGBTQ in the army situation. Mm-hmm. Or, for example, when it comes to cadence. When it comes to audiences, what I'm always thinking about is more of what is the world that I'd like to see and how to make it happen.
Exactly.
Cadence sort of began in a world where at the time what was big was Saw and gore and like the gore noir genre. Now, I saw a lot of those films, those horror films, and at first they're accelerating and exciting. We were talking earlier about why horror is exciting to me before their show began. But after a while, it just becomes, a bloodfest. And the reality was, for me, the most interesting horror films are the ones that have some kind of intelligence behind it and trickery. And, they're trying to really get you. And so in that time and that period where we began making Cadence, those films weren't being made anymore, right? Like if you go and see a Hollywood film right now, there isn't, or, a couple of months ago, there isn't a Sixth Sense kind of film anymore. And that's what we were trying to create. We created Cadence. And it just seems like the zeitgeist has moved along with us, because now all of a sudden we're seeing this resurgence of films like Hereditary, which I just saw recently. It's kind of like The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. We're seeing the Conjuring films, which are also, in that sort of realm. We're seeing Get Out, which speaks about representation and talks about The Shining.
It's creating insight in the horror genre.
It's we're back to the world that I wanted to see. Now, I'm not saying that Cadence was a part of it. I just think it was in the side, guys. There was a hole in the market, and we were filling it. And then now the market has realized, why aren't we, the bigger market has
realized, joined this. We're getting tired of superficiality over here. There is something more that we want to tell in the genre is away.
And it's the reality. I mean, I love superhero films, but and I love Star Wars films too, but when you go to the Cineplex and all the 14 theaters are only playing a Marvel movie and a Star Wars movie, there's something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, there is indeed. What do you think about that, Ben?
I agree.
all right, that was it, boom, all right, space bar, there you go, okay. right on. Well, I want to ask you guys, because there is a lot of fire here in the booth today, lots of energy splashed through the microphone. Where do you guys see yourself in 5 years?
Wow,
look at that silence. all right,
dead air. This industry is so unpredictable. I've told my partner year after year after year, this is the last year, I'm done, I'm burned out, I can't do this anymore. I'm looking forward to when I can just go and focus on my music career and write novels in coffee shops and and do anything but this, which is so immensely stressful and nonstop. But the problem is it comes back to this kind of reward cycle as well. You get these successes and make it a little bit further on and think, wow, someone just came up to me and explained how this movie changed their life and how they've started a new business because of the inspiration, and you see the effect that you make in the world. Mm. And, you know, the internet moves so quickly. Things change so fast. You have to be flexible. You have to be able to pivot. You have to be able to move with the culture and understand the culture. Where am I going to be in 5 years? I have no idea.
Yeah, I think we have we go back to the concept of adaptability over here. Yeah. How about you, Nicolas? In 5 years, where do you see yourself?
5 years. Well, I think I will be in Vancouver at the very least. I don't like cold weather, so Toronto is, you know, just invite me in the summer. and I also have, you know, my thoughts about what LA and New York think of. I do like Vancouver. I do like the industry. I like the fact that it's also not the number one industry, because it basically means what I was talking about. There's a gap here that needs to be filled, but there's a lot of opportunity in this so-called Hollywood North for it to stop being called Hollywood North and just being called Vancouver, right? And those stories that truly come from here. And and the thing is, Vancouver is really a global market. There is everyone who is in Vancouver is not from Vancouver.
Yeah, so that's true, eh? It's very international melting pot right here.
Very international. I mean, yeah, I'm talking to an American, I'm Colombian, and you're Italian. So
yeah, it's like a little bit of a mess, but we love it, we love it, we love this mess, yeah.
So it is, for me, Vancouver has always been a playground. I'd like to be here. I'd like to have the capacity to be making several projects, at least two or three.
I'm happy to hear that you're happy, man. That's great, yeah. We have a little bit of a challenge actually coming from Ben right after the break, so stay tuned and enjoy. This is the soundtrack of Lord of the Rings, because, of course, we dedicate the episode to the fantasy lovers out there for the Fantasy Network. See you in a second. Ciao, ciao, everybody. Welcome back. Here we are talking movies on Room Tone, the radio show. Ben and Nicolas, we have a little bit of a challenge for Ben right now. Just right before getting into the show, Ben asked, you know, to be challenged with the one-minute pitch. We always do the one-minute pitch here at the Room Tone. We give the chance to the guests to talk for 1 minute about a project that they want to do or create or so, sort of give to the people out there. And what is going to happen, Nicolas is going to throw at Ben one location, one character, and one problem. And throughout the 1 minute in which Nicolas is going to pitch his own project, Ben is going to create and reach through the corners of his imagination and then pitch his own story with those variables that Nicolas gave. So, Nicolas, what are those variables?
All right. So I've been thinking about it. I'm basically, your character will be a dark wizard.
Okay.
Your location will be a deserted island.
Okay.
And your problem will be the quest for finding love through adoption.
Oh, wow. Perfect. That is an incredible. Okay, so while Ben is going to work his way through this, we're just going to have to go through the pitching for Nicolas. Nicolas, are you ready? You let me know when you're ready.
Yeah,
are you ready?
I'll be as ready as I can ever be for
all
this.
Right. Let's give it a shot. And the clock is going now.
All right, so I'm going to be pitching Defining Realities, which is a documentary by my friend that I'm producing. My friend's called Yangos Hagianis. Defining Realities is a documentary about the burgeoning world of XR. XR is better known around the world as virtual reality, augmented reality, and mixed reality. We're going to be following a team of people working at the edge of the Vancouver tech industry, figuring out what the future of the different realities mean to the actual reality that we're living in right now. What does it mean to be creating worlds in virtual, augmented, and mixed realities, and how that'll affect the lives of millions of people across the world?
Okay, you have 15 seconds if you want to splash some more stuff in there.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we'll be just interviewing a lot of our friends from the Center for Digital Media, where I went to school. To doing my master's degree, and a lot of these people work in a lot of the big tech companies of Vancouver.
Awesome. All right, that's the clock that's revved up, right? Yeah. But now it was so interesting to see Ben over there thinking about this pitch. And are you ready? Okay, you ready to go?
Let's find out what happens.
Let's run. Let's go for it. Okay, this is Ben's pitch with the variables that Nicolas gave him around this fantasy world. Okay, enjoy, everybody. This is 1 minute pitch.
So this is a show about it's a modern retelling of The Tempest. It takes place on a desert island, and it is specifically dealing with the story of children who have been ripped from their parents, which is very topical right now, and looking at how they can make sense of their own culture and what they remember of it when they're put with foster parents. And so we have a dark wizard on this island who is incredibly lonely, who wants to find love, but in order to do that, he has to create these horrible storms that will bring shipwrecks in. So he is wrecking ships on the island and ends up killing all of one of their particular crews except for a young child, and then must try to build a relationship and with this child over the course of the first season while he is being challenged by his own conscience and trying to attract more ships to stay alive.
Wow, look at that story. That's amazing. Wow, that's an incredible one. Just improvised like that.
I think The Tempest was a perfect choice. I didn't even think about it when I just came up with that's great, man. You did just fantastic.
That's a great combination of factors. So well put together. Yeah, yes, interesting. I didn't know about that. I didn't see that coming. That. Beautiful. I love it. All right. Let's moonwalk into the Proust questionnaire. Sure. So Proust wrote 35 questions. He thought that they would identify someone's true being. But we're going to have pick five of those, and we're just going to discuss and get to know a little bit more about each other. So the first question, actually, let's go for it right away. What is your greatest extravagance? Hey.
Extravagance. I don't know. I like eating.
All right. Who doesn't? Yeah.
I have two. I love to design and stage massive live-action murder mysteries, which takes way more time than I have, And my other big extravagance is really awful reality television.
Okay, awesome. All
I can
right.
relate to that.
Wow.
But I love Kitchen Nightmares with
yeah,
Gordon.
Yeah. Okay.
Survivor.
Oh, Survivor. Yeah.
Lost on an island.
Yeah. Speaking of islands.
Second question of the Bruce Questioner. When and where were you happiest?
Ooh. I mean, I think I'm happy now, but I always go back to my time in Bolivia just because it was a completely, it's so different from what you see on mainstream television and what you see in the world. Like Bolivia, it's almost like living in a different world, in a different time. It's timeless. I don't want to, you know, fantasize it as this magical land where like things don't happen. But I really, it makes me, every time I think about it, it makes me realize that every part of the world, it's its own little pocket of reality. So I go back to that a lot because it's so different from what I live here in Vancouver.
It is a pocket of reality. I like that combination of words right there. How about you, Ben?
About 4 years back, I was approached by a director I knew who begged me to be music director for a live action theatrical, for musical theater, basically, mm-hmm. to come in, be the musical director. And I said no, and she asked again, and I said no, and she asked again, and finally I said yes, and I felt more like myself, just getting to be utterly creative in real time with real people in the same room, making awesome music and telling an amazing story than anything I've done.
That must have been a very magical situation, very magical opportunity, you know, get all that energy flowing through the room. How about that experience? I'm curious. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. Well, it was a libretto and book by a Vancouver composer named John Woods, and it was put on down in Seattle, and just one of those things where I had a break in my film schedule and had the opportunity to collaborate and not have to worry, be the person worrying about budgets.
Okay.
Just be creative.
Yeah, that's awesome.
What's that like?
Yeah. That's amazing.
Almost too sweet.
That's amazing.
Third question of the Bruce Questioner. If you were to die and come back as a person or a thing, what would it be?
Oh, man, just person. I don't know what thing would be. No, I'd rather come back as a person, and I'd rather come back as, you know, I'd just love to be a person that is in a completely different cultural context. Like if I was born in the Middle East or in China or in Russia, I would like to experience that. And I would like to experience different timelines too. You brought up Mongolia, and to me, like one of the most interesting periods in history is the Mongolian Empire.
For sure.
Ben, you got something to say over there?
I think it'd be fascinating to come back as someone who got extraordinary access and then had the opportunity to become a whistleblower.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Look at Ben.
So much corruption in this world,
there is,
and not enough people are willing to
so many surprises.
You're just a guy who like can see all the Facebook data.
so many surprises over there. Wow. Yeah. Okay, so this is the fourth question of the Proust question. It's going to be interesting. What do you regard as the lowest depth of misery?
Oof. Probably not having any friends or family or any type of support network. Like you don't need a family. You can create your own families. But if for some reason you are not even capable of having friends, I think that must be the loneliest kind of experience possible, even if you have money or you don't have money.
Wow, okay. I resonate with that. I really like that. Ben?
Destruction of family, destruction of culture, having your children ripped away from you. You know, obviously Canada has a history with that. The United States has
That's
a history
true.
With that.
Oh, yeah.
Many other countries do as well. Mm-hmm. For me, that is, and it's happening right now in the States, it is utterly abhorrent. And being a parent, having a young child or infant taken away and never seeing them again is for me worse than anything I can imagine.
I really agree with that as well. Hey, we're touching some low notes. We're getting into some minor chords over here. Okay, yeah. We can close an eye on those things though, and we know in what land we're standing. So, yeah. We have to be aware of the situation. No time to close eyes on that. But going back to your note, Nicolas, you were talking about friends and family. The fifth question of the Proust Questioner before we wrap this episode up. What do you most value in your friends?
Just the ability to speak my mind and B, answered back, really, because I learn a lot from my friends and I make new friends all the time. And sometimes I'm very wrong and sometimes I'm very right. And sometimes I just want to say something that's in my mind. And I like being wrong as much as I like being right.
Wonderful. And good, nice combination right there. Ben?
I think what I love about my friends is that they haven't given up. It's so easy to just fall into the patterns that we're expected to and to kind of passively go through the motions and get the little house in the suburbs and go to the job and just kind of try to preserve our own lives. And being friends with people who are engaged and who are aware and who, like you were talking about earlier, see what the world should be and are trying to work in whatever way they can to achieve that better world. That's an extraordinary gift.
Community building.
Yeah.
Goes back to community, yeah? And that's what we're building here, talking about this and sharing our love for the craft.
Yeah.
And that's what we do here at Roomtone. Roomtone Radio Show every Monday here at 11 a.m., sharing our passion for the craft of filmmaking. If you're a filmmaker yourself and you want to come here on air, just send us an email at listentoroomtone@gmail.com. Now, I want to thank you guys very much, Ben Domins and Nicolas Hervé Barona. You guys can find the links in the description of this podcast as well. We release it as a podcast as well. Any final notes or advice for filmmakers out there?
Wow, advice for filmmakers, tell your story. Don't try to think about what story is going to appeal to the mass audience. Tell your story that is meaningful to you, and you will find people who are like you.
Mm-hmm. Nicolas?
Never stop. I think a lot of filmmakers, they do one short, and 5 years later, they're like, oh my God, I haven't done anything. And I'm like, but that's your fault. It's not the 1950s where like going to get a camera meant that you had to go to Claremont.
Live whatever. The moment. Live make it happen.
Yeah. You have an iPhone. Make a video with that.
Absolutely. Go make it happen. Right on. This is the tip for you guys out there. Enjoy life. See you around. Ciao, ciao.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with all.